Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from The James at Ohio State, providing access to the most advanced cancer treatments available from a team specialized in treating just one type of cancer, yours. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/choosethejames.
This podcast was produced Wednesday, October 22nd at 9:55 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Yeah, like Tim Ryan will finally announce his plans for the 2026 campaign.
Well, we're waiting.
Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those Snollygosters, those shrewd politicians, who gather us for a redistricting commission meeting that could have been just an email. I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up in the podcast, that meeting generates our Snollygoster of the Week Award. But first, a roundtable discussion. We continue to wait for Tim Ryan's decision on a run for governor. It seems like he wants to, but we're still not quite sure. A judge has blocked Governor DeWine's 3-month ban on intoxicating hemp products. And there's a big issue out there. It's still out there. High property taxes. It is probably topic number one for many homeowners around Ohio. And state lawmakers are hearing from them. Lawmakers are trying to tweak the system to lower rates or at least slow the increases. And a group continues its campaign to get a question on next year's ballot that would abolish all property taxes in Ohio. A new study says if that happens, Ohio would be in quite a fix. The Tax Foundation says if the state and counties were to increase income taxes to make up for the difference in the loss of property taxes, the statewide average total income tax would be 13%. Right now, the average of state and local income taxes combined is 9%. To discuss the study and the struggle to fix the system, we turn to Republican strategist Mike Gonadakis, OSU political scientist Herb Asher, Ohio Public Radio reporter Joe Ingles, and Signals statewide reporter Jake Zuckerman. Jake Zuckerman, the report shows the money's going to have to come from somewhere, and we're getting some hard numbers attached to this proposal.
Yeah, in some counties over in Appalachia, it's all the way up to 23%. I think of the whole thing as a thought experiment. I wouldn't read it necessarily to say, I mean, it's certainly not automatic, and it's probably not even probable that this is how the chips would fall, but I think it's like you said, the money has to come from somewhere. If we cut a leg off, we need to grow another leg somewhere. And I think that this study captures just how difficult or how ugly or messy that could be.
Are income taxes, Herb, a more fair way if we would have to raise them? If you figured out a way to raise them equitably across all the state, across rural and urban counties, would it be a more equitable way to fund services?
It would be more equitable than raising the sales tax dramatically. So the challenge here is a lot of people don't understand that even if you're a renter, you're paying property taxes. The landlord builds that into the rent. And so a lot of times people vote for levies and the renters are saying, oh, I don't pay property taxes. And you do. So we need to find a way to distribute the burden more equitably.
Mike, what would be, let's just play this out. Say the voters approve this. It gets on the ballot, which is not a slam dunk. The voters approve it, which is not necessarily a guarantee. Let's just say that happens. And voters do abolish property taxes. Where would lawmakers go first, do you think?
Look, Mike, there's no one-size-fits-all solution to this, and our state's never confronted an issue like this, whether it's under Democrat control or Republican control. Maybe the savings and loan crisis we had in the 70s, maybe a little bit before my time. But at the end of the day, we have $19 billion worth of property taxes that are used by local governments, all different forms, shapes, sizes, every single year. We get, what, $12 billion in income tax, $13 billion in sales tax. As Jake said, you take out one of those legs, what are you going to do? Nobody has a solution. But here's one novel concept we can do to help chip away, because I agree with Jake, you know, I think they're going to have a uphill battle to get on the ballot. Why don't we start looking at how we're spending money at the local government level? Governor DeSantis in Florida is taking a Doge-like approach county by county. Maybe we can cut property taxes 10% if we find efficiencies. Why do we have 611 school districts? Maybe we can consolidate. Why do we have all these different things? Let's take a look at it. We're going to have to take a look at collective bargaining because 85% of every dollar that's being spent goes to salaries.
Joe, is that going to happen? That's very difficult politically.
That's job security for a reporter because there's going to be a million stories coming out of that.
It's not going to happen without a catastrophe. Now, the catastrophe, so-called, in a lot of people's opinions, would be the abolishment of the property taxes.
Right. But, you know, what? Everything that you just brought up, those are issues, you know, when you start talking about unions, when you start talking about raising this tax and compensating over here or having state government come in and tell the locals how to do it, I don't know. Yeah. I just think there's a lot of controversy there. And the other thing is, consider this, that when you have local taxes, those are things that people are most connected to their local leaders, their local schools, their local libraries. They use them the most. They know the people there. And I think it's a recipe for a lot of controversy.
I did math. It's always dangerous. So I put that as a disclaimer.
You're a journalist, Mike.
Okay,
I don't know.
But I checked my math. Okay, let's just take a $75,000 yearly salary, which is a decent middle class salary. A 13% increase in the income tax would mean that person would pay an extra $3,000 in income taxes per year. Sounds like a lot of money. Then you look at the median property tax in Franklin County, and it's $4,000. And then you go up into the more affluent suburbs, and you're talking $6,000, $7,000. $3,000 more in income taxes versus $7,000 in property taxes, I'm going to take the income tax hike.
That's too rational, because what happens then when you start talking about raising taxes, all of a sudden it's raising taxes. Oh my God, my income taxes are going up. Oh, the property taxes, at least I could vote on them. Unless you're, you know, so there's the challenge here, it will be a bad scenario. And presumably if that measure were to pass, it takes effect in 30 days. And so the new governor, you know, will have a miserable situation. The legislature will have a so what do you have to do? You have to try to come up with some resolution right now that takes the steam out of the entire movement. And I'm not advocating putting barriers to getting on the ballot, but I am advocating that you really do have to do something now, because otherwise you're going to have a disastrous scenario.
That's what this report said, Jake, is that you can't just abolish property taxes. You have to put before taxpayers and voters what the plan is to make up for that revenue. Mm-hmm. Will that be on the ballot?
No, it won't. I mean, I would call that sound fiscal policy for a state trying to chart its future. That is not what we're looking at. We are looking at a simple up or down vote.
But as we learned with the redistricting amendment, there's a creative writers group in the ballot board. Mike, do you think they would write a ballot language that would be that would lay this out saying this is what would happen if you abolish property taxes?
Well, at some point it's going to be too voluminous, right? And who actually is going to read the fine print at the end of the day? So those creative writers would have to come up with a solution to say, here's the real impact of getting rid of property taxes. But Joe said, you know, hey, look, it's a local issue, and it is a local issue. The number one way to stop your property taxes from being increased is to start voting down some of these levies, though, too, or hold your local governments more accountable, because all $19 billion were voted on by the voters and they approved it. Now they're saying, save me from myself. Hey, take responsibility. Vote no. Hold your government accountable.
You better have all the statewide candidates, not just for governor, but all the other races say, if it's on the ballot, vote against this. And the challenge, you know, obviously he's backed off now, but Vivek Ramaswamy was one of the people who really got it on the agenda a while ago, saying maybe abolish property taxes and even the income tax. And I think he had the good sense, or advisors told him, this is not very good, and if you're going to be the next governor, you don't want to have to deal with that problem. But
the liberal bastion of North Dakota voted on this last year, voted on a proposal to abolish property taxes. It went down by 64%. 64% of the voters in North Dakota said no to abolishing property taxes. There was a pretty active campaign there as well. Anyway, Governor DeWine's ban on weed light is on hold. A judge this week put a temporary block on the ban of intoxicating hemp products. Franklin County Judge Carl Avini ruled DeWine overstepped and violated the separation of powers as defined by the Constitution. The judge ruled the power to ban Delta 8 and other products rests with the legislature. The judge put a 2-week hold on the ban. The ruling has prompted Republican legislative leaders to question whether a single judge can stop a law or a governor's executive order. Mike Anadakis, did Governor DeWine overstep? Did he violate the separation of powers provision?
Absolutely not. He got it right. Mike DeWine, he takes a lot of criticism. He gets a lot of credit. But the one thing he cares deeply about is children in our state. My kids, your kids, all of our kids and grandkids. Look, Mike, here's a picture from his press conference. The top row is candy my son buys way too much. Going to rot out his teeth. The bottom row is drugs. If he ate one bag of these, he would die. And we've got grown men and women. We've got corporations marketing to kids. We tell the tobacco companies you can't have Camel Joe, the cartoon character. Booze companies, you can't market to kids. But it's okay to put this stuff, this crap out there. Right. It's wrong.
And Governor wasn't saying that the judge actually said in the summary, this needs to happen, but lawmakers need to do it, not the governor. Now, the governor, Herb, said that during COVID took all kinds of heat for his executive orders, but now those same lawmakers are saying this is the right way to go.
No. As Mike said, legislature needs to step up to the plate. There's a serious issue here. It's been a serious issue in a lot of states of dealing with any kind of recreational marijuana, these kinds of products. And you really have to talk about product labeling, the presentation of these products, how do you protect the kids from getting a hold of them when adults buy this and bring it home.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a challenge also. So the legislature may be mad at the governor, but then they have the responsibility to step up and do something.
I mean, if I could, this is the good and bad of Mike DeWine. I think over the past year, Mike DeWine has done a masterful job of forcing this issue to the forefront. I mean, you saw those pictures. He has sent children of state officials into gas stations to go buy this stuff and show, like, look, I'm a child and can come out with these intoxicating drugs. Clearly, this is a problem. That said, he has pushed for legislation to address this problem, and he has failed. He's unequivocally failed, and now he's trying to say, well, I know I spent the past year trying to get a bill passed, but it turns out I had this power unilaterally to do this all along. So I think that there's a clear separation of power. If he didn't need the legislature, why did he spend a year trying to get them?
And he said himself early on that he couldn't do this, right,
Joe? Yeah, he did. Mm-hmm. He did, but I think there's one thing we're missing here. We're talking about this again. He forced this to the forefront. We're having that discussion, and so are the lawmakers. And I think that's key, because they are talking about it. The problem is they agree on a mass number of things, right, when it comes to this issue. They're just not passing a bill on the things they agree on. There's like little things here and there that they disagree on, and they let it hold up the bill. So the question will be, will they come up with a bill on the things that they can all pretty much agree on?
It would cause compromise. It would be a compromise, right?
It would be compromise, yes.
No, you might wait until some child dies, and then we'll have a piece of legislation called the Jimmy Jones bill. And
that's terrible.
It is terrible.
And Sharonville, just this week, a public school in Sharonville, two middle school kids are in the hospital because they got a hold of this stuff that looked like gummies, nerds, and sugar babies and stuff. We got to get this off the streets, out of the gas stations, or our kids' lives are on the line here.
What about the argument that one judge cannot make a rule that affects the whole state? In the case of this ruling, or one judge cannot make a ruling that affects the whole country. Herb.
We'll let, in Ohio, the Ohio Supreme Court address that issue if it gets there, and the same thing at the national level. But the important thing.
But in 90 days, some of these businesses could be out of business if a court would uphold this ban.
Yeah, but and if the court does uphold it, then that answers your question.
Yeah. Yeah, and I would say if they go out of business, good for them. I'm glad they're out of business. If they can't change their labeling and marketing, you shouldn't be in business.
Moving beyond this, should a one judge in Franklin County or in Cuyahoga County or in Meigs County be able to issue a ruling to say this law is unconstitutional or this order is unconstitutional?
If we don't have something like that, then we could be in a situation where in Franklin County you cannot sell hemp, but in whatever other county you can. Now, Republicans at the State House for the last 20 years have been passing preemption bills that explicitly say, we don't want the patchwork is always the argument. We don't want a patchwork. We want certainty in the law. We want people to know, guns being the obvious example. It shouldn't be legal to have a gun in this county and illegal in that county. It's confusing. No one can know.
Yeah, good point.
I think you look at the issue, too. I mean, it's hard to be a purist here. And there may be some issues where you can sort of have local differences or whatever. But if you have something really very, very significant, you know, I think you'd say, okay, let's let the local judge make the ruling. If it gets overturned, so be it. But in fact, you need somebody to step in. And
logically, a single judge in a state, even if it's a large state, makes more sense than perhaps a single judge in California or in Texas making a ruling for the entire country, or does sure. it, should it matter?
You're right. Supreme Court of the United States just recently ruled that you can't do national injunctions anymore. Yeah. So they struck that down. We can take that same concept to bring it to Ohio and say a local judge in Cincinnati can't set statewide policy. And maybe they can set it for Franklin or Hamilton County or Cincinnati and then expedite it to the Supreme Court if it's a constitutional issue.
But would it be for all laws or just the laws that the party in power is challenging right now? Because you know what it is, when the Democrats are out of power, they go to judges in California, they get Republican laws overturned or halted. Yeah. Republicans, when they're out of power, they go to judges in Texas to get Democratic laws halted, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly it.
Unbelievable system. Yeah. Unbelievable system.
Beauty is in the eye of the beholder.
Yeah.
And this again reinforces why the legislature needs to step up to the plate.
The headlines in the 2026 campaigns for governor and U.S. Senate are: former Congressman Tim Ryan seems to be moving closer to saying he will run in the Democratic primary for governor, but nothing close to making it official yet. In the U.S. Senate race, former Senator Sherrod Brown is off to a good fundraising start. He reports raising $8 million over the past 3 months. That's more than double what incumbent Senator John Husted raised during that same period. Herb Asher first to Tim Ryan. He is now 2 weeks past his self-imposed deadline to make a decision. No decision yet. What's going on? What's taking him so long?
I'm trying not to smile too much, but when and if he makes a decision, this could just go on forever. But let's assume he decides to run. If in fact in that when he makes that decision, if he doesn't announce at the same time that in this time period I've been raising money, I've got a campaign kitty of multiple millions of dollars, 3-4 million, I've got all these endorsements lined up. If all he announces is that he's going to run, a lot of us will say, well, what have you been doing in the past couple of months? And why did it take so long to have sort of announcement that really didn't have a lot of substance beyond the fact that you're running?
Is it really that late, though? It's late because Vivek Ramaswamy jumped in really, really early, and Amy Acton did as well, but we're still a year away from the election.
Yeah, no, it is late, especially given some of the things that, I mean, Tim Ryan's been teasing us. Mm-hmm. And the more you tease people, the more you expect that, okay, what's the answer? And if the answer is you decide not to run, okay, no problem, no harm, no foul. If you are going to run and there's nothing else that you can say about your campaign, then it seems like it's been a wasted opportunity.
Jake, the speculation is, the word is among some Democrats, is Ryan wants to run because he doesn't think Amy Acton can win.
Yeah, I'm not inside Tim Ryan's head. I mean, a colleague of mine did a nice little chart of the various statements of thinking about it, seriously thinking about it, really, really seriously thinking about it. Who's to say? I don't know. I don't know what he's thinking.
Can Amy Acton win, Joe, do you think? In this state, favors Republicans, a fairly new politician, brand new politician.
Yeah, very heavily favors Republicans, and a lot of people were not happy with her and the orders that came out during COVID. That being said, a lot of Democratic faithful, I went to the Democratic dinner the other night to kind of gauge the crowd and see what was happening. A lot of the Democratic faithful really likes her, and when she goes out on the, talking to different places around the state, the audience that comes to those events seems to really like her. So, I don't think that we're talking a year away. A lot can happen in a year.
If they want to face off each other in the primary. Ryan and
but that's a long time in the world of politics.
Mike, I mean, Tim Ryan, the state favors a Republican by about 8 points here, just on with generic ballot. Tim Ryan equaled that generic ballot when he ran against J.D. Vance. Would he stand a better chance against a Republican candidate than Amy Acton?
It's hard to say because I think Vivek's going to easily win this. President Trump will campaign for him in Ohio. J.D. Vance will come back to Ohio and campaign for him, Elon Musk and others. Trump is still wildly popular in Ohio, and I think it's an uphill climb for any Democrat, especially Amy Acton. But I don't think, Tim Ryan is total selfishness. You're trying to hijack his party for himself. He's putting pictures of selfies on Twitter saying, I've got a decision I need to make down at Bridge Street in Dublin. Come on. I mean, step up, be a man, and make a decision to let your party know. Who am I giving advice to? Tim Ryan, but at the end of the day, it's arrogance, and I think the Democrat voters are going to see through that. They're going to at least get behind Amy, who's out there working, trying to make a difference.
$8 million by Sherrod Brown in 3 months, former U.S. Senator. Is that a number we should be surprised about?
No. And in fact, this will be a very important Senate race. Both candidates will have all the money they need. They'll be up in the 20s, 30s, 40s. And it doesn't matter if one has 5 million more than the other. As long as they both have huge amounts, they're in good shape.
That's a pretty safe prediction. Money will not be a problem for a competitive U.S. Senate race in 2026. My thanks to political scientist Herb Asher, Republican strategist Mike Gonadakis, and State House reporters Joe Ingles of Ohio Public Radio and Jake Zuckerman of Signal Statewide. We'll be right back.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
Time now for our Snollygoster of the Week segment, where we honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the past week. You know, it's getting kind of boring, but this week we have to give it to Republicans on the Ohio Redistricting Commission. Lawmakers are approaching the final phase of the process of drawing and, in theory, debating a new congressional district map. The Redistricting Commission met this week, but there was no map. And it's looking more and more like the public and state lawmakers will not see the map until next month when lawmakers face a final deadline to approve it. And by waiting that long, Republicans only need a simple majority to pass it. We should call this ongoing snollygostering. That will do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster. We are a part of the NPR network. As always, try to give us a good review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast, and just tell your friends about us. For our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, and our audio engineer, Dalton Jones, I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.